This is your World War III update. Trump just leaked the plan. He just leaked the plan. He just basically outlined how the United States and Russia are going to be in a perpetual cold war, a hot cold war for the foreseeable future. There is no plan. There is no plan for peace. I have been consistent in my view, steadfast since day one, since Trump won the election, to the dismay of many, many followers, many of which have left the channel long ago. I've lost tens of thousands of followers because I stayed true to what I thought was true, irrespective of the negative outcomes it would have for me. I told you since day one that nothing is going to fundamentally change in the dynamic between the Russians and the United States. Why? Because these two nations are economically diametrically opposed to one another. And there's so much invested right now into this conflict. There is so much distrust that it is an irrevocable situation that is not going to be resolved in 24 hours, 24 days, or 24 months for that matter. In fact, we are about to reach an impasse, and I'm going to explain everything about that in just a moment. But understand first and foremost that the United States has nothing to gain from doing business with the Russians. They have everything to lose. They have everything to gain from continuing this conflict, from continuing it in a way where perhaps it's a frozen conflict, which is also called a Cold War, especially when you're talking about East and West. Everything that Russia can give to the United States, Canada can give to the United States much, much cheaper. And that should explain to you precisely why you're having this attempt to consolidate the Americas and these threats of tariffs and Trump trying to bring everybody back in line and at the same time bringing back all the gold and at the same time leaking these low-level state secrets to keep everybody distracted, and they're about to do another one tomorrow. And that tells me that you got to watch what the other hand is doing right now, okay? Because this is getting deadly serious. We are approaching the moment when the emperor reveals that he has no clothes. People say it's Trump derangement syndrome. That's what stupid people say. And I'm glad that I've been able to curate my audience to you fine people who remain. Thank you. Thank you. Because I really have sacrificed a lot to maintain this perspective, even though it has not been a popular one. Nobody that I know has this perspective. Pretty much everybody, with the exception of maybe Mark Sloboda, who is a pro-Russian analyst, is skeptical enough to kind of see that what we're being told, like the Russian crowd is saying, hey, we won the war and the Americans are our friends now and they're going to remove sanctions and we're going to work on joint projects in the Arctic and nuclear deproliferation and all that stuff. And then you have the Ukrainians crying like it's the end of the world. It's not the end of the world for Ukrainians. And the Russians didn't win the war. Nothing has fundamentally changed. Okay? So, okay. Here's what I'm talking about. Listen to what Trump says and then pay attention to what Trump actually does.
What does Ukraine get in return, Mr. President?
$350 billion and lots of equipment, military equipment, and the right to fight on.
The right to fight on. Well, wait a minute. I thought the war was over. Why would Ukraine sign a deal? I mean, just think of it. It's the most common sense. We shouldn't even be having this conversation. It's like as dumb as the conversation is, oh, Ukraine's never going to be in NATO. They have all the NATO weapons. There's NATO instructors on the ground. They're NATO, okay? De facto NATO. So he's saying they're going to fight on. Why would Ukraine ever sign a deal if it meant that it was just a payback for stuff that they never agreed to pay back in the first place? Let's listen on.
Originally the right to fight. Look, Ukraine, I will say they're very brave and they're good soldiers, but without the United States and its money and its military equipment, this war would have been over in a very short period of time. In fact, I was the one that gave the javelins. You remember the...
Oh!
Famous javelins? That was me. That wasn't Obama. It wasn't Biden. It wasn't anybody else. It was me. And they wiped out a lot of tanks with those javelins.
They did at the start, but they've become much less effective since that time. And it takes several javelins, unless you get a really good hit, apparently, to take out a Russian tank. Now, understand what he's saying. And there's lots of people who will still defend him and say, oh, no, he didn't start. It was Biden that started the war. Trump backed out of the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty. That is the fundamental linchpin that prevents World War III. And now they're going to bring back Tomahawk missiles to Germany. And Germany is now in the process of getting ready to send Taurus missiles to Ukraine. And peacekeepers that Sergei Lavrov has explicitly stated today is not going to fly.
The expression was that Obama gave sheets and I gave the javelins. That was a big deal at the time. It wiped out. That was the beginning when people said, wow, that's something. Well, that was American equipment. Without American equipment, this war would have been over very quickly. And American money, too. I mean, a lot of money.
Okay, let's just listen to that last part again.
Quickly. And American money, too. I mean, a lot of money.
Okay, so in terms of American money, a lot of money, these guys, and by these guys, I mean the establishment, and Trump absolutely is the establishment. They have no problem with Trump, trust me. If they did, he wouldn't be there. Of course, I mean, they could have totally rigged that election up and down. I mean, there's enough PR people who can read the room who could have told Kamala, you got to, or somebody, we got to get somebody who can beat this guy. Now, listen, in terms of the money, Afghanistan, they spent 20 times the amount as they did on Ukraine. And that is arguably not nearly as important of a conflict geopolitically as this one. These guys will drop trillions on wars without thinking. And I mean, he's even talking about it already. Okay. So all they want now is to have some sort of recompense for their investment and lure the American people into participating in this conflict with the promise that don't worry, you're not going to have to pay that much. You absolutely are. Do you really think that you're going to be able to go in there in a war zone and mine these rare earth minerals that you can get from Canada? Most of these things, they could develop in Canada in a relationship where they didn't have to go in a war zone. This is all just a tripwire. This is so that they can set it up so you get American people on the ground, you get European peacekeepers on the ground, and they get caught in the crossfire, and that's when shit hits the fan. And the Russians haven't agreed to any of this, even though Trump has mistakenly said on numerous occasions, falsely is a better word, because the Russians deny this, that they've had talks about putting peacekeepers in there with the Russians. Lavrov and Putin have denied this outright. So we are all being played. Understand that. Now, understand one other thing before I get accused of Trump derangement syndrome and thinking I'm Jesus. And I know somebody is going to take that way out of context, just like my Sag Hill or whatever the hell it was that I just did there. Understand what I mean by that is that, let's just listen to see what else Trump says, because I'm just going to end up going on too many tangents in this fucking video.
So war fighting equipment and the ammunition, that's sustained going forward for Ukraine? And how long is it sustained?
Well, it could go forward for a while, and maybe until we have a deal with Russia. Look, we need to have a deal with Russia. Otherwise, it's going to continue. But now when Americans put up their money, the taxpayer money, and the president approves it, we're getting our money back in some form. But it could go on for a while, or it could be settled quickly. I think it's...
They always have gotten their money back. See, that's the thing. People don't realize, look, since the war started, people think I'm just ranting and raving and I got nothing to back this up. This is liquid natural gas revenues since the war. Monthly U.S. liquefied natural gas gross exports from 2016 to 2024, billions of cubic feet per day, went up since the war started in 2022 from 10 billion cubic feet per day to 16 billion. Okay, and you know why that was? Well, it's because
a thing called Nord Stream blew up, all right? And that was a plan to provide Germany with cheap, liquefied, or not liquefied, I guess it would be natural gas, because you wouldn't have to liquefy it. It's a pain in the ass to do it. It's very expensive. And then you got to ship it. It's probably quite dangerous, I presume. So there always is money being made here. Do the American people see that money? Probably not. Probably not. There's fiscal benefits that are perhaps too intricate in order to easily explain, but a lot of it just comes down to global economic hegemony. So having the global reserve currency, suppressing the euro, and making sure that the United States is always the top dog. That's what it's about. That's where you get the benefit. That's why you can have $35 trillion in debt and still be a functional society that isn't in a state of free fall collapse. That's why. So, you know, people are going to get mad at me for that, but that's just the truth.
And it's not because, it's because I love my American neighbors. I love my American neighbors. I love my Canadian patriots as well. You have to be told the truth, okay? People who are just saying what you want to hear are not telling you the truth.
It's going to be settled quickly. I spoke with President Putin. I think he wants to settle it. And wants to get on with life.
Flippant's not really the word. There's just no real thought put into this. You know, they have no plan. They have zero plan. His intentions are probably that he'd like to resolve this thing in the U.S. favor and maybe stop the Russian war effort. But fundamentally, everything that the United States could get from Russia, even the nuclear fuel that is specially designed to fit in U.S. nuclear reactors, they could, you know, retool all that and get it from Canada. We have some of the most uranium deposits and rare earth minerals, for that matter, in Saskatchewan. Okay, that's where they get Cameco, or one of the biggest suppliers of uranium to the United States and the world, for that matter. So everything they need is in Canada. That is why they're trying to strong arm Canada into giving them a better deal, because they know the multipolar world is about to really take off. And they need to make sure that everybody is on board. They're interested in, do you really think that the Russians are that stupid that they're going to believe that there's any prospect of doing business with these people? Especially now that Trump is doing this in defiance of what they've already talked about or ostensibly have suggested, that we're going to, you know, not continue to arm Ukraine. Trump just said they're going to continue to arm Ukraine. Let's see what else he has to say.
Biden has spent $350 billion without any chance of getting it back. Now we're going to be getting all of that money back plus a lot more. And we provided a great thing. I mean, we provided something very important. And we'll be working with Ukraine, and because we'll be taking that, we're going to be taking what we're entitled to take. Now, they spent $350 billion and Europe spent $100 billion. Now, does anybody really think that's fair? But then we find out a little while ago, not so long ago, a few months ago, I found out that the money they spent, they get back. But the money we spent, we don't get back.
I said, Macron kind of corrected him the other day on that. They get some of it back in loans. But I mean, you know, that's about as good as the paper that it's printed on.
Well, we're going to get it back and we'll be able to make a deal. And again, President Zelensky is coming to sign the deal. And it's a great thing. It's a great deal for Ukraine, too, because they get us over there and we're going to be working over there.
Listen to what he says here, okay? I should have played this in the first 2 minutes of the damn video, but I've been too busy ranting and raving. Listen to what he says here.
To sign the deal, and it's a great thing. It's a great deal for Ukraine, too, because they get us over there, and we're going to be working over there. We'll be on the land, and, you know, in that way, it's there's sort of automatic security, because nobody's going to be messing around with our people when we're there, and so we'll be there in that way. But
who's going to be there in that way? We'll be there in that way. Nobody's going to mess around with our people. Again, this is a recipe for disaster. especially if you're calling Zelensky a dictator, which is all just the aggressive age-old tactic that is practiced by Trump to try to rattle people's cage so that they, you know, come to the table. It's a strongman negotiating tactic. It's not really meant to be taken seriously. Trump calling Zelensky a dictator is not something to be taken seriously, even though he is very much a dictator. He's right that he is. But that doesn't mean that Trump is not willing to do business with him. Clearly, he's willing to do business with a dictator, okay?
And, you know, in that way, it's there's sort of automatic security because nobody's going to be messing around with our people when we're there. And so we'll be there in that way. But
so essentially, you're going to put these people in a potential hot zone, which presumably some sort of private military contractor, so you can circumvent having to put troops on the ground. And are the Russians going to allow this? Honestly, what we've seen in terms of their pain tolerance level, they keep saying all these things are red lines. Now, I'm sure the reason why it hasn't happened yet is because in whatever back channels of communication remained under the Biden administration, they probably, you know, the real red lines were outlined behind the scenes. All of the other red lines, like if you hit Moscow, we're going to nuke you, or Medvedev's rants on Twitter, those things don't really count as what the red lines are. The red lines were established on the back channels. They knew that this is what's going to happen. If you do this, we're going to drop a nuke, or we're going to ramp up our nuclear proliferation, or we're going to do a nuclear test or something. Those were the conversations that we don't hear, but that were most certainly happening. And remember, we still do not have an ambassador inside Washington. And that is one of the most overlooked aspects of all of this. Yes, they're in the initial phases, the preliminary phases of bringing back diplomacy, but they're only in the phase of talking about, it's not even diplomacy yet, they're in the phase of talking about how they're going to initiate diplomacy, okay? And get Russian, you know, diplomats and envoys back inside the United States, which is a critical first step. But if you're the Russians hearing what he's saying, this is purely an attempt to stall negotiations, or purely an attempt to just stall the Russian advance. Because from Russia's point of view, they have to take the territory, and it has to be secure, and you can't have European troops in there because that makes it a de facto NATO state more than it even is right now.
Europe will be watching it very closely. I know that UK has said and France has said that they want to put, they volunteered to put so-called peacekeepers on the site, and I think that's a good thing.
Mr. President.
They volunteered to put peacekeepers. Nuclear France is going to put peacekeepers on the site, while Germany sends them some Taurus missiles. Let's see what Lavrov has to say about all of this. And notice the body language, okay, between Lavrov and Vladimir Putin, who I talked about yesterday, who is incredibly tense. This is not the kind of person who is excited. If they were excited, you'd see him smiling more in front of cameras and just being more jovial in his presentations. But these guys are on edge because they understand the gravity of the situation. And they're not just fecklessly stumbling into this like American diplomats currently are. And who's going to believe Marco Rubio, of all people? I mean, that guy's the biggest bullshitter in the room.
This is out of question.
He's talking about putting peacekeepers in Ukraine. This is out of question.
This is out of question. We can't contemplate any options here. I don't know what Macron might say on that. He wasn't looking very convincing in Washington. But President Trump, when asked about that, as I read, said...
Here's where he tries to be gracious and he tries to be congenial. He tries to be respectful of Trump and perhaps even try to subtly sow division between Trump and Macron in that little statement that he just said. So I can't help but analyze this stuff.
President Trump, when asked about that, as I read, said that deploying peacekeepers is only possible upon consent of both parties, meaning obviously us and Ukraine. We haven't been asked anything about that. And I think this approach, enforced by Europe, by France and Britain, first of all, is aimed at what I've just been saying here about further escalating this conflict, preventing any attempts to bring it down.
Okay, so he said a lot of important things in that statement, primarily that this is an attempt to kind of go around and, like, why didn't you guys tell us about this first? You know, you think if you're going to enter into negotiations, you can't be signing deals before you enter into negotiations that are going to essentially shape the parameters of the negotiations and that are non-starters for the other side. You can't, unless you're willing to commit to the war. Has Trump called back Ukraine from Kursk? No. Has he told Ukraine to stop attacking the Kerch Bridge like they just did yesterday? No, which, if they were successful, would have been a major flashpoint of escalation. Has Trump told them to stop firing drones at Russian oil refineries? No, because they benefit from that. People, this is not rocket science. In the very least, you don't have to believe a word I say, but just keep prepping, because one of these days, you are going to benefit from doing that.
And now he's even talking about the return of lost territories. So there's so many contradictions and hypocrisy here. Like, how can people believe this shit? Oh, you know how they're going to believe it? They're going to, you know, release one page of an Epstein report every day for the next four fucking years. And even if all of these names of notable figures came out and we find out that they're a bunch of pedophiles, which we already pretty much know, what is that going to fundamentally change? Like, that is not an establishment. That's not something that's going to fundamentally change things.
Taurus for Ukraine. Bundestag calls on German government to initiate the supply of long-range missiles. And now the new chancellor is in support of this move as well. The conservative bloc, which received the mandate to form the German government, will be forced to convince its partners in the future coalition of the need to increase military assistance to Ukraine. And now the Europeans are trying to get in on this because they don't want the Americans to cut them out. Remember, this is a Mexican standoff, ultimately. It is Europe, it is the United States, and it is Russia who are in this Mexican standoff. And it just so happens that the frenemies, what is that old saying? I can't remember exactly. I'm going to totally butcher it. But something to the effect of, I don't pity America's enemies, or is it, somebody's going to write it in the comment section. It's worse to be America's friend than their enemies. Something to that effect. Because there's going to be a double cross at some point. And it's not Americans. It's the American establishment. Okay? It's the military-industrial complex. It is not American people who are benefiting from any of this, ultimately. Except in the sense that you get to use pieces of paper to buy shit from China. But that time is ending, too. The Bundestag is calling for increased military support. And Markus Faber, chairman of the Bundestag Defense Committee, emphasizes the importance of continuing military aid amidst the ongoing conflict with Russia. Here is J.D. Vance
supporting what Trump said and somewhat revealing the method to a degree.
Other leaders, and I think that's how this has to go. I think that I just want to push back against some of the criticism I've seen in the administration on this, because every single time the president engages in diplomacy, you guys preemptively accuse him of conceding to Russia. He hasn't conceded anything.
That is true. They got to stop doing that, because that is just as dumb as the Russia bros saying that we won the war. People need to see the bigger picture here. All, especially people in the NAFO Ukrainian camp, they just can't seem to wrap their heads around what's happening here. It's just simply that the administration is now different, but the actual strategy is still the same. It's just they have to kind of project this image that in order to appease their base and have them slowly acquiesce to this, right? Because if they were to just come out and be like, we changed our minds, we're going to continue to arm Ukraine, that would have a really negative knee-jerk reaction amongst their followers. So in order to assuage people and kind of time release this in such a way where it looks like they're doing something when really they're not doing anything at all. So later on, when they do finally ultimately end up with more javelins and troops on the ground, they can say, well, at least we tried.
Anything to anyone, he's doing the job of a diplomat, and he is, of course, the diplomat in chief as the President of the United States.
And he hasn't conceded anything. That's what he said there. We haven't conceded anything, which they haven't. And you would think if this was real diplomacy and if you're trying to win back the trust of the Russians, of all people, who, you know, I mean, they have no real reason to trust the U.S. at this point in time, especially when they see these shenanigans ongoing, right? They see them, you know, violating, not violating, but really breaching the trust before diplomacy has even started. After years and years of doing that same thing, I mean, there's going to be no change. And now they're, okay, so they're going to arm Europe with trillions of dollars worth of military equipment? Yeah. Nothing's going to change. Sorry, I mean, you want the Disneyland Channel? Go watch the Disneyland. Somebody wrote a comment the other day, oh, this is an hour of pessimism. Well, hey, we live in reality here on this channel. If you want to delude yourself into thinking otherwise, or if you have a good argument to the contrary, feel free to post it. But don't just say, oh, I'm being pessimistic or contrarian. Provide a counterpoint, and maybe, you know, there might be something I'm missing. I don't know at all. Trump threatens 25% tariffs on EU. I keep seeing this threatening. Apparently, we're going to be getting tariffed here in Canada soon. I actually think it's 50-50 at this point. Okay, it's really 50-50 whether or not they're going to do anything. And I think this approach that he's taking is really not fooling a lot of people anymore. This guy here on Bloomberg is breaking down the rare earth mineral aspect. Number one, most of them are on the side of the Russians. Number two, it's really not that much of a profitable enterprise. It's also not easy to do. And doing it in a war zone, you know, it's so there's all kinds of reasons. And there's not even necessarily that many there on their side, he's saying. So it's really just a ruse to get the Americans in there. That's all it is. Because, look, again, fundamentally, they don't care about spending money on the military. They don't. Trump doesn't care about spending money on the military. They will spend as much money on the military as they need to maintain global power and to maintain control. And honestly, it's the rational thing to do if your entire system is based on lording over people with your fiat currency. You got to maintain that, right? So Lavrov is announcing a new round of Russia-US talks. Well, what are these talks about? The high-level diplomats from Russia and the United States are set to meet this week in Istanbul in their respective embassies. And the purpose, the outcome of the upcoming talks would determine how quickly and effectively we can move forward. The two sides are expected to address systemic issues stemming from the previous U.S. administration's unlawful actions to create artificial obstacles for the Russian embassy operations. So that is going to be step one. Now, Trump also posted this video. It's an AI-generated video of the Gaza Strip. I'm not sure who's in charge of his account or if they just did this to be provocative, but there's all kinds of weird stuff in here. And, you know, AI is goofy. And, of course, it's got like two belly dancing, looks like transgendered men, women, I don't know what they are. Belly dancing on the beach in the Gaza Strip, and Trump's getting to know the Semitic peoples
up close and personally. I'm not sure how Melania is going to feel about that one. Then we got, you know, Netanyahu and Trump sitting on Gaza Beach while Elon eats a cookie or something. A much younger Elon, by the way, before he had his hair treatment. And we got some golden Trumps here and a golden statue of Trump in Gaza Strip. Now, I don't know. Trump posted it, not me. So, you know, it is what it is. It's just, you know, at this point, you could just say and do anything. And it's all about pissing people off. But understand, there's a very negative sentiment building in the shadows. You don't see it probably in your filter bubble. But because I'm tuned in to both sides of the argument, I can tell you beyond a shadow of a doubt that there are the videos that are getting views, especially on YouTube right now, are in the pro-Democrat camp. Now, that's because there is a digital divide between YouTube and increasingly X and Rumble and other places. We're becoming more divided digitally, and people are going to those sources of information. But I still think YouTube is a fairly, because YouTube is smart, and this is how they've been able to stay in the game for so long. They're smart in that they understand the value of catering to both sides because you can sell ads to both sides. And they're not going to alienate 50% of the population just because they might not agree with them. And who is they? I mean, these technocrats, they have no loyalty politically, religiously, or otherwise. That should be proven. Look at Bezos and Jeff Zuckerberg and the other Google CEO there, I can't remember what his name is, you know, just rank and file, lining up at the inauguration like good little boys, right? These guys will do and say whatever for whoever. They have no allegiance. They have no allegiance to the truth. Maybe they have their own reasons for that. Iran has accumulated a record amount of highly enriched uranium. They're definitely talking about it. And if that happens, that's only going to exacerbate the conflict in Russia. Elon seems to be of the opinion that Fox News is not establishment media. And this is something I just don't get. Tulsi Gabbard just called out CNN as the propaganda arm of the intelligence community. Much watched video with this asshole. I can't stand this guy. Everything about this guy. Anyways, so yeah, I guess Fox News is still, even though it's one of the biggest corporations, they've always been a mouthpiece for every bad war that the U.S. has entered over the years. But suddenly, they're the ones that are going to save all the people from the bad people. Okay, whatever. This is a post from Table Salt, which is a political commentator on X. And he's talking about how a new poll from Ipsos is showing that the liberals are taking the lead for the first time in 4 years. And I warn people about this. It's sad. It's really sad that this shit is going to happen again. And this is why I might have to take Trump up. I'm going to have to take donations from my American viewers to come down there. You got to get me $5 million, but then I need $5 million for the whole family. So it's not going to happen. So I can come and migrate. I was supposed to have a guy on the show who helps people get other green cards and visas and passports to other places. That's part of his whole survival strategy. Pretty high profile guest. I'll try to get him on the channel. We just kind of fell out of contact. But on Polymarket, they're still of the belief that the conservatives are going to win. Now, to Polymarket's credit, so this is where you just, you know, bet on what's going to happen. It's obviously been declining. It's about just under 70% now, 69% of people believe that the conservatives are going to win in Canada, and about 30% believe the liberals are going to win. Now, according to the Ipsos poll, obviously this information is false, right? So what I will say, initially, I doubted Polymarket's estimates because I thought it's skewed to the right. I thought that Polymarket is something which, of course, has a Republican bias or a right-wing bias, and thus it's not really a representative of the a valid representative of the population. It's not a randomized sample in the purest sense, like an actual poll is supposed to be. But we know polls are manipulated. But then when you think about it, and it could just be to demoralize conservative voters to say, well, you're probably not going to win anyway, so you might as well not go out and vote, right? But it can also backfire in that it can make liberal people complacent, which is what it did in the Kamala Harris campaign. Even though Polymarket was saying that Trump was going to win and all of the polls were saying that Kamala was going to lose. So despite the bias, and that one was a lot closer than this, by the way. So who knows? Who knows what's really going on? All I know is that they, you know, if they get in, then we're going to have some real problems as firearms owners. So Bitcoin seen its biggest withdrawals since, I think in all of history. Its biggest withdrawals in the last, I think it was the last 24 hours or the last week. But Bitcoin is crashing. It's a bloodbath right now. I mean, I warned people about that. Percentage of Congress over the age of 70. I mean, we live in an aging population, but just look at that. I mean, this really mirrors the inflation graph I showed you yesterday. We're inflating in age, too. Oh, yeah, this is some great advice, okay? Great advice from Ian Carroll. Let's see what he has to say.
Volatility.
That's what I love about it, man. That's my favorite part about Bitcoin. Being like entering kind of financial literacy in general from a GameStop investor perspective, I'm down with volatility. Like, I'm super into that, and I'm down with holding forever. Like, I got that.
Holding forever, like, what's the point of holding? The whole purpose of money is to spend it on something somewhere down the road, right? Hodling forever, this hold on for dear life type mentality where you're going to never sell is just kind of dumb. Like, everybody sells. Warren Buffett sells, you know what I mean? But volatility, everybody always thinks that they're going to be on the right side of the volatility. But when you're on the wrong side, man, that's when people start jumping out of windows.
And so when I look at Bitcoin, it's just such a no-brainer of, yeah, I'll put...
No-brainer is right.
Because I think a lot of Americans genuinely don't have the ability...
Don't get me wrong. I actually like Ian. I agree with him about a lot of things. And some of his, you know, conspiracy videos, his shorts are interesting. But this is just... this is silly. Let me let him talk.
...ability to really make savings right now. And so... Yeah, it's not it. That makes it impossible to look at, because if you need your money today, you know, it's not the asset for you. But when you're trying to, like, when you are taking your finances responsibly and doing something like the old adage of put 10% of all you earn away forever as you're growing wealth, like, that is just so clearly a Bitcoin position. As in, so many people are looking at their IRAs now and they
can never explain to you why that is the case. It's just because more people are going to adopt it. That's it. That's the whole strategy. It's not because, you know, it's like a company. It's showing new technology and new revenues, and Bitcoiners will say, well, it's great technology, but, you know, the people who are more advanced in the crypto space will say, no, it's not the perfect. There's all these problems with it. Anyway.
Like, investment portfolios that are being managed at, like, you know, 3 to 5%. It's like, why would I keep... That, like, a lot of people are starting to realize, and I'm not telling people to do this, is like, people are realizing, like, I should just take the tax hit of withdrawing all my money from my retirement account right now and put it all into Bitcoin right now. Because even if I were to give away half of that money to taxes, I would still make it all back and then some in the next Bitcoin cycle.
It's going to be.
Greed kills. NVIDIA, despite having blowout earnings today, fell flat after hours, meaning that the party's over, the top is in, okay? It didn't crash, but it didn't go up. And if NVIDIA ain't cranking higher and higher, if there's not one stock to carry the market higher, Tesla's in the shitter, down 40% since December. Everything's in the crapper right now. So this is it. This is when we start going down the other side of the mountain, okay? In fact, these are projections realized in market flat baseline for global equities, okay? They're predicting over the next week that billions of dollars are going to be exiting the stock market, that there is a very high probability that this market downturn. I wish I would have had this graph when I did my stock market crash video. But, I mean, these are just estimates. It could go flat, sideways, but the majority of the projections are slowing, are showing a exodus from equities. This is Trump talking about becoming, you know, Alberta integrating with the United States. If these tariffs do come in, guys, my Canadian friends, my American friends, I haven't been beating this drum because people are going to accuse me of fear-mongering. But, you know, if you want to get stuff from across the border, whether you're in the United States or Canada, it's going to be a lot more expensive, okay? So if and when Canada imposes retaliatory tariffs on Canadians, you are going to see a 25% increase in cost. And you're going to see a lot of places go out of business. And I would just say that if you want to get stuff to err on the side of caution, get it now. But again, I don't know if Trump is just talking out of his ass and hoping that the Canadians are going to capitulate. But there has been no conditions other than we got to get an oil pipeline built. I guess that's, is that what it is, even though they don't need the oil? But this is just the thing. Remember, everything that the United States could get from Russia, they can get from Canada much cheaper, much safer, much faster, more efficiently. This is the Arctic sea ice extent. This is going to be a watershed year for Arctic sea ice, okay? We are going to see, it's going to get hot. Very, very hot. This is record lows. This was the warmest year on record, the lowest sea ice ever recorded in 2012. Ever since that time, it has gotten lower, but it's never been consistently lower all the way. And typically it happens every 5 to 10 years, there's like this big step downwards. And that's what we're going to see this year, I do believe. And when that happens, that's going to cause heating, rapid heating around the world. And we're going to see some very, very hot temperatures this spring and summer. I mean, after that polar vortex, we're now in record temps every day. Like it's been 3 degrees, 5 degrees, 6 degrees. It's been very warm here, unusually warm. And it's going to continue. And I mean, look at the poles. The poles are the ones that are the hottest. And of course, that means that the ice is melting there. And that just has all kinds of disequilibrium effects on the system that eventually are going to contribute to, you know, the whole issue is that maybe we're not going to be able to grow food at the same scale, and there's going to be some plague or pestilence that emerges because permafrost melting and, you know, you name the potential threat. And am I saying that it's because I want a carbon tax and a carbon tax? No, a carbon tax is not going to fix this. I mean, Trump is already talking about they need to 3x their energy output for AI. 3x the energy output. Now imagine when 7 billion people want to come online and get a little bit of that energy expenditure as well. I mean, it's going to be a frickin' sauna. Because, you know, a great way to look at it, people struggle to understand how Guy McPherson always said it best. He said, civilization is a heat engine, okay? What is the, when you put on your car, what is the effect of combusting fuel in an engine? Heat. Heat is given off. And there's just a little bit of that heat every year, just a tiny little bit that compounds every single year. And when you look at the globe at night and you can see all the cities and the lights, those are all little fires burning, little tiny fires, right? You can see from space, and that's happening every day. And it, if you look on the time lapse, the NASA time lapse, from when the lights started getting brighter and brighter, back in the early 20th century, it really kicked in around the 70s and 80s, because that's when things really started to illuminate at night. All those little fires, and that's just a way, that's just a metaphorical. Obviously, there's more fire actually burning in the daytime. You just don't see it from space. But you get my point. You get the metaphor, right? These are all, and it's not even really a metaphor. It's what's happening. You're combusting fuel in some way, shape, or form, and you're releasing that as heat energy in the form of light or whatever else you're using that energy for. And those little increments is compounding every single year. That's why when people talk about, you know, CO2 is so negligible compared to that which is released by volcanoes or all of these other natural processes. While that is true, it's that that little tiny bit compounds every year. It doesn't go away. It doesn't dissipate. It compounds every year. And because we're deforesting, you don't have the trees absorbing it. Is there ways to resolve this issue that don't resolve in a resort to a carbon tax? Yeah. Is that going to happen in a multipolar world? No, it's not going to happen. And that means that conditions are going to get harder. There's going to be more viruses. There's going to be more, you know, bioweapons. There's going to be more authoritarianism. There's going to be more laws and regulations. There's going to be more war for resources. This is just the inevitable reality of what's about to unfold here. That is the reality, folks. That's the reality. And it's something that I think we can prepare for. What the world is going to look like in 50 years, even if it doesn't look like a radioactive hellscape, I don't know. But at this rate, with Jevons' paradox and the more energy efficiencies that we find in the system, we just want to use more and more energy. I think that unless we discover nuclear fusion and some really, really cheap way of doing carbon capture, and we can sort out our political disputes and our geopolitical disputes, maybe AI is going to make nanotech machines that just create abundance, and we no longer need to have hierarchical systems, and we can just get along with one another. Just keep prepping. You know, it's good to have that insurance. Anyways, I think I've spoken long enough. I probably lost another 10, 20,000 subs. C'est la vie. C'est la vie. I'd rather tell the truth. Thanks for watching.